Ways and Means Public Safety Subcommittee, June 24th, 1991, 1:30 p.m.
First on the agenda today is Senate Bill 971. Senator Dukes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm Joan Dukes, State Senator for District 1. And to the best of my knowledge, you have before you a compromise, the Dash A6 amendments to Senate Bill 971. And they're not what the bill started out to be, but they're not bad. They still...
I've heard that before.
You've heard that before, many times before. It sets up an advisory committee rather than a separate board, which everybody had agreed to, and requires that they adopt rules to require that applicants provide evidence of completion. So that when you go in to make your application, you still have to show something that says you've completed up to 16 hours of education. And after discussion, I think that their reasons for the up to 16 hours make sense. If we do have people...
Just a moment, Senator. Senator Bradbury, on the back page, you'll note that they have changed the 8 to 16 hours.
Right.
Go ahead.
We do have people who stay within the law, who want college kids who want to go paint houses during the summer, and there really is no reason to require 16 hours for somebody who's doing that. And there are other more specialized folks out there who really don't need the full gamut, but this allows them, and I have assurances from the board that they are interested. If we have somebody who's going in to structurally remodel your home, they're going to get the 16.
I think Representative Croy has a question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator, you caught my attention when you talk about, because we've been through this two or three other places where someone who's going to go out and paint houses, do they really fall under this definition?
They have to have the license. Now, the reality as I see it is that most of them don't bother getting a license. They go out and sell themselves and make their money.
Well, let's not use them as an example.
Well, but there are some who come in.
Yeah, that's fine.
And to tie the hands of the advisory committee or the construction contractors board to where before they, the people who wanted to be legal, that they would have to take 16 hours of education before we could give them a license, doesn't make a lot of sense. So this gives them flexibility to deal with what the person is going to be doing. And I think that's reasonable. And then on the back page, where we're taking the people back 3 years, those who were licensed up to 3 years ago would have to provide evidence of completion of some education prior to renewing their license. The 8 on line 4 would be changed to 16, which is the same, makes them consistent with the rest of the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clory.
So, Senator, what's different than what we talked about before then?
The up to 16 hours, and there's language in here that addresses what I think Senator Hannon was concerned about and perhaps some others in the initial hearing. Subsection 3 of Section 2, which gets the board out there. It addresses those areas where there may not now be a community college or something else to help provide the training, gets them out there to encourage. It may be video that they're using for the training. It could be various and sundry things, but gives them a proactive role to get out there around the state and try to see to it that this is available to people. I think that's a good move.
Why are we specifically saying community colleges have to be a member?
Because you want someone from the education side on that.
How about if we change it to say somebody representing education?
That's fine with me. I don't have any problem with that.
See, they do that every time.
This is more, well, actually, it wasn't the community colleges. It was that put that in. But at any rate,
would that be okay?
Yeah, that's fine with me. Traditionally, they provide that role, but they certainly don't have to.
Are there questions of Senator Dukes, other than what's already been asked? Representative Calori, you are attempting to amend the amendments?
Well, I was... I'm inclined to want to do that. I don't want to cause a lot of trouble.
On line 13, you could take out the community colleges and insert the word education.
Yeah, what I, Mr. Chairman, what I was doing here, for myself at least, is saying one member shall represent educational institutions.
Well, I think that, Representative Cloria, I think that the on line 13 would be a proper place to put that in, and be very little to do. Senator Hannan, do you have any problem with that? We will remove the community colleges and put in represent education, right?
Or educational institutions. I don't know which you want.
No, education's all right. That's sure.
Okay.
Any further comments? Is there a motion to accept the amendments as presented by Senator Duke?
That's so moved, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannan moves that we amend Senate Bill 971 by the -A6 amendments. Is there objection? Now, these amendments include 16 hours on the back page instead of 8. Is there further comments?
Do we expect to see another member?
Voted out. We'll take you off the committee.
I might.
So we're going to take this in 2 years. Keep this on the situation. All in.
We get 2 years.
Then all in.
Are we having problems again?
Fred Manatta on behalf of the Oregon State Home Builders Association. Kim Mingle from the AGC, if correctly recalled, that all general contractors. All non-residential contractors just came into the system in January of 1989. And the way this word is worded, the 16 hours, we would drag them, every one of them, through the 16-hour hoop. And I don't believe that's any of our intent. And we are busily, we've got to fiddle with a date, too, because you'll remember the last session of the legislature brought all non-residential contractors into the system. And that's about 8,000, give or take, about 8,000 additional registrants. And we really don't want to bring Hoffman Construction Company through the 16 hours of training if we could avoid it.
Mr. Chair,
what's your
Fred
remedy?
Was just sending there's an either or. I think on line 3, if you take the 3 years to 2, so you're really going back 2 years, I think you leave them all out? Okay.
Is that another offered amendment now?
Yes, sir.
On line 3?
Page 2.
Delete 3 and replace it with 2?
Yes, if that'll get them out, that's fine.
Being a contractor is almost like being a legislator.
And then
I'd move the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Can we just put a line that says, do whatever you want to do anyway? What the heck?
Preferably not, Representative Cloria.
You're almost there. Almost there.
Senator Hannan moves that we include in the offered amendments on line 3, change the word from 3 to 2. Are there further? Hearing none. Are there objections to the amendments? Hearing none, that's ordered. Senator Hannan moves.
Mr. Chair, did you change this 8 to 16 on line 4?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Senator Hannan moves Senate Bill 971 as amended 3 times to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there further comments?
Since you said comments instead of objections, this is shameful. If I was the industry, I'd be totally ashamed of this, and I am ashamed to vote for it.
Next session, Representative Clark.
But I will.
But you will. He says, I will. And so the Senate Bill 971, it's on its way to the full committee with the due pass recommendation. Chairs are Senator Hannan and Representative Jones.
Yeah.
We'll close the hearing on 971 and I assume opened it on 2543. Is that right, Robin?
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Ron.
You're welcome.
You now have the rest of it.
Appreciate that. Any of there others who
believe that, I have beachfront property in Arizona available.
And a bridge in New York, I
guess. We'll open the hearing on House Bill 2543. And Stan Robson.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Stan Robson. I'm Chief Criminal Deputy of Benton County Sheriff's Department. I've been in law enforcement for just over 20 years. 14 of those years I was involved in the investigation, also my caseload being in the area of sexual exploitation of children. And I've been on a committee to draft this bill, which extends the period of time for probation and parole for sex offenders. And we see it as a real need when we look at the careers of many of the pedophiles in particular that we're dealing with, and that we're dealing with people not only in their teens and 20s that are offending kids, but on up into their 70s and 80s. And it's something that they don't just quit after being caught, convicted one time. And one of the things that we have found over the number of years that in working these particular cases is that these people do perform pretty well when they're on probation with certain restrictions, limitations, and do have somebody that is supervising them. But once off the supervision, they will get back to the lifestyle that they're wanting to be in. And that is why we think it is really necessary for this to be lengthened, if at all possible. Also, we know that there would be an impact in that there would be the caseload would increase, but it will be some years before that really that impact is really felt, because the current load will progressively have to build up and a lot of them are coming off also. But the impact, I think, would be lessened also because many of these folks are employed, most of these folks are employed or employable, and do pay their way. In some jurisdictions, when court orders such, they do pay for the polygraph responsibilities and are very good about keeping up with their supervision payments.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Clory.
On that point, does line 8 imply supervision fees paid by the offender?
That's
as opposed
correct.
To a general, okay.
That's correct, that's so by the offender.
Okay, good.
And we think that the impact will be lessened. There certainly will be some eventually, but it will be some time in coming. But we think the amount is much less reduced by putting them through the system again, and certainly is much less to keep them in incarcerated state. And most of these folks will work well on probation and parole.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannah.
The Senate, I think, passed a bill that said that people had to be registered sex offenders.
Correct.
Does it go in compatibility with this, so it's a person who's out there, you know where they're at because they're registered or following their activities?
The registration bill is one that I think can work in conjunction with this, but
with
we
this.
Think that this is going to enhance it more, because registration bill, it's tough to monitor in being able to keep track of these individuals. While they're on probation or parole, they're going to have to be checking in with a particular person, an entity, in order to maintain credibility with what's going on there. The registration is fine up to a point, but it's tough to follow
I
up
see.
On. This is going to enhance the registration bill.
Thank you.
Representative Clory.
Just to make sure that I understand, this does not encourage anybody to lessen the term that they actually serve. It just says that at whatever point they are no longer serving, you got to make sure that the rest of it is taken up with post-supervision.
That's correct.
That's correct.
We think that by keeping tabs on them in a longer period of time, we have better success.
Yeah, that wasn't my question, though. My question was, there is no implication on here that someone that would be...
Not in lieu of.
Sent, yeah, there you go. That's okay. Thank you.
Further questions?
On a motion?
Yep.
Move it.
Representative, just a moment.
Sure.
Robin, did you have something to add to this? Yeah, it's ready to go without a minute.
Correct.
It's been moved by Representative Clory that House Bill 2543 be moved to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
Did Ms. Clausen want to say anything? Are you in support of it?
She hasn't signed up, Senator Hannon.
No, we're not supporting it.
There is a fiscal impact, but it is not until approximately 2001.
Oh, and
I'll be retired.
Well, I won't. I'll be here.
You'll be
here.
Well, no, that's fine. I just thought that she is here, and I didn't know.
Well, she hasn't signed up.
Okay.
But she could say something if she wanted to, although we're going to pass it, I'm sure.
Okay.
Very good. Get on the record.
For the record, I'm Elise Clausen from the Department of Corrections. We at the Governor's Task Force, supported increased supervision of sex offenders, and philosophically we clearly do support that because a number of sex offenders do well on supervision. The two points I would point out is that our figures indicate that there will be fiscal impact within 4 years. So it will not be this coming biennium, but it would be in the following biennium. And it will be a multiplying effect over time because of the people who will not be dropped off of supervision and more people will be added. The reason the fiscal impact isn't until 4 years out is because everyone currently is on for 3 years of supervision anyway as the minimum. So it will take effect once this law takes effect, then anybody who is sentenced from that time on will be for longer periods of time, and that will begin to multiply over time. The other concern that I have on the fiscal impact is that...
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, let me separate there now. Part of this is the person would be paying for it. Isn't that correct?
Chairman, Senator Hannon, they currently, on supervision fees, an offender is usually paying, if they pay, are paying about $25 a month. That would cover a fraction of the cost, actually. We currently, our supervision fees are part of our overall budget, and they go to pay for the S&S costs of field services. They are not paying for the actual direct supervision or personnel costs. And it's about $25 a month, which is far less than what it costs to actually supervise someone for a month's period of time. So there's going to be a substantial difference. Yes, they may be able to offset the cost some, but it certainly won't pay for all.
How are those set?
Those are by law.
Well, they
and
are.
And that's not a maximum. The court could set more than that, but they take into consideration the financial ability of the offender to pay. And generally speaking, it is $25 or less, and not all people pay for it. There is a higher collection rate, I would say, among sex offenders than there are some other offenders, but they
well, is there something that we could help with, maybe even next session, that would clarify that a little bit and make it clearer that it is the legislative intent that those be set with regard to total cost and not just supply S&S? Can you bring back to us something that helps with that?
I suspect you could do that. The question then would be whether or not you could actually collect that
well,
amount.
It's my understanding as well as the earlier witness that many of those are capable of doing paying that. So but it didn't make sense to come in and say we're not collecting very much when in fact we could do more to see to it that we collect more.
Well, and we do collect, as I said, we collect probably better from some of those offenders than some others because many of them are employed. But
well,
as you said, the fee is not high enough at this point.
Yeah, but we could fix that.
We could fix that. We could affect that at least.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I would encourage you to come back next time with some wording on that very thing that gives some more guidance to the count to the court.
On those particular offenders.
Sure. On this particular fee. make it clear that it can, what it can cover, and then they have their discretion.
Mr. Robson, you you seem to want to respond there.
And Mr. Chair, just to add to that, in that that supervision too, after a period of time, is lessened to a lower level where the expenses are going to be there, plus just what she addressed, though, is that the courts can add more to it, and in many jurisdictions are doing so, including the mandating them to pay for their own polygraphs. So it can, the cost can be covered by the offender in most cases. There's going to be some indigent cases, but most of them will be able to pay.
Okay.
Further comments? The motion is still before us to send House Bill 2543 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion. Is there any objection? Hearing none, that's ordered. And I'll close the hearing on 20.
Who's carrying the House and who's carrying the Senate?
Senator Hill will carry it in the Senate. And Representative Cloy will carry it in the full and on the House floor.
Thank you.
Close the hearing on 2543. And what's the number of the next?
1006.
We will open the hearing on Senate Bill 1006.
But Mr. Chairman, just to make sure on that last one, was it moved to full?
Yep.
Okay.
Sure was. Wasn't you here?
Somebody pointed out to me that maybe it wasn't quite.
I moved it all the way in there. I even said due pass.
And it's even Monday, it was nasty already.
We'll open the hearing on Senate Bill 1006. I believe that's what it's
called. Yes, it is.
And we have Jack Landau. Is that Landau?
Landau, Mr.
Landau.
Chair.
Landau. Couldn't tell whether there's a U or an M there.
Lawyers have notoriously poor handwriting. I'm not surprised.
Well, you and the doctors. And have Mr. Bob Olson along with us, too.
I'm his sidekick,
Mr. Chair. Is that right?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Jack Landau, Deputy Attorney General, here on behalf of the Department of Justice in support of Senate Bill 1006. This will probably be one of the easiest decisions that you have to make today, if not the week. The sole effect of Senate Bill 1006 is to authorize the assistant attorneys general to do pro bono work. Current law says that
for
we have to
non-lawyers do explain pro bono.
What that means is that we are authorized to provide free legal services to the indigent, to poor people on our own time and without state expense. Current state law says we have to devote full time of our law practice to supporting the state only, and we would need this brief amendment to allow Assistant Attorneys General to do that kind of work.
Questions, Chairman?
Senator Hill?
Jack, would this allow representing someone at work, representing one side of a case, and representing a conflicting client after work?
Mr. Chair,
the protections against conflict of interest?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hill, it would be governed by an internal policy that would not allow any assistant attorney general to represent a pro bono indigent client that would be in conflict with anything we've got going on inside the office.
Mr. Chair? We've exhausted testimony. I'll move the bill.
Did you have?
No,
I'm sorry.
The bar is for it. It's our bill.
Good. And Senator Hill,
good testimony.
Robin, did you have anything to add?
It's
ready to go without amendment. Kendra Hill has moved Senate Bill 1006 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Hearing none, that's ordered. Tender Hill, they'll carry it in the full and over there, and I'll carry it on the house side. If they don't
ask me a bunch of lawyer terms or whatever.
Thank you.
I think that's all we have, except that I, just a minute before I adjourn, those two judiciary members there, I think they thought their bill was going to be up today, but I think it was canceled.
Criminal Justice Council is what they wanted to talk to you about, Mr. Chairman.
Right.
I don't think it's on our agenda.
It is. Well, it is for tomorrow. It was for today.
Oh.
Then we
tomorrow.
Come right in, you two House members, judiciary, whatever, attorneys, both, or singularly, or plural, or whatever.
Can we discuss something that's on our agenda?
We will. We'll open the hearing with a few minutes' notice just for information purposes on. On the Criminal Justice Council, I'm not going to name a. I'm not going to name the bill because I think there's a couple, but we will. We'd be glad to let you make your comments, Representative, the Chairman of the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee. Knowing that at some time, and I apologize, I thought it was today that you would be dealing.
Let me explain, Representative Miller. It was on today, but due to the little discussion that a couple of members had on the floor of the House, it was postponed until tomorrow.
I appreciate that. Appreciate knowing that. Well, if it is, as long as you've afforded the time, let me just say that so far as I understand, one, the requested amount of money, and from what I understand may be an amount that some have deemed appropriate, somewhere in the neighborhood of $560,000 for the Criminal Justice Council. Let me suggest either that figure or the $650,000 original request, I believe it was, are both unbelievably excessive. I know this committee has worked hard on trying to examine existing budgets, budget requests, and tried where they might to encourage efficiency, economy, and scale back in light of other important needs of this state. If there is an area where I think total elimination would be appropriate, this would be high on that list.
Just a minute, Representative Miller, total elimination of the funding or the council?
Well, both, Mr. Chairman. As you know, this is an organization that is due to be sunsetted. It has not yet been renewed. We are about ready to undertake that discussion in the House Judiciary Committee, and there are a number of pretty substantial members up there who don't believe that Oregon would be worse off if the Criminal Justice Council was not a part of our statute. Let me say that that may not, it may survive. And if that happens, one of the things that at least the chair of the House Judiciary wants to look at is the size of the group. It is currently a 21-member committee. You guys are large, but you're not even that large. And I would certainly tell you that the decisions you make are far more influential and important to this state than what they have been doing. When you look at the charge of that particular organization, a lot of studies are involved, sold in the name of coordination. And let me just say that, Mr. Chairman, one of the things I am trying to do is, if the council continues, I will try to have it represented by a larger segment of elected people who give the council some additional credibility, accountability, if you will. Because what I've found is many, many people out in the state are not especially impressed with the grid, the guidelines grid. But who do you talk to about it? You've got this kind of anonymous group out here, the Justice Council, that nobody really knows about and nobody can get to. And so what I'm anxious to try to do, again, if it must continue, is have a larger legislative contingent,
elected officials, people to whom the public can go and say, the guidelines are too wimpy, the guidelines are too harsh, and if you don't shape up, we'll try to hold you responsible. Right now we've got a lot of citizens who I think embody a philosophy that was probably popular maybe in the 60s, that are crunching guidelines in a direction that is not in the best interest of Oregonians.
Well, Representative Miller, let me ask you this, and we're serious now. We
yes.
To chewing one another out like we do on the floor there, but the sentencing guidelines and, of course, the Criminal Justice Council are tied together by the statute, which I've read several times, by the way. And if you do away with them, then, and don't repeal the sentencing guidelines, then they're locked into their present position. Is that a fair statement?
I think that's correct, yes.
And you have no problem with that?
Well, that's why I'm, at this time in the session, going to have to, instead of redesigning the guidelines and trying to recapture authority in the legislature where I believe it should be, we'll probably have to exist with a better counsel.
Well, Representative Miller, I totally agree with you that we should have done both, and that is redo the sentencing guidelines, and then if you want to do away with the council, that's fine. I personally don't disagree with what you're trying to do, cutting it down and cutting down the funding and all that, but I don't think we can get along without some sort of a criminal justice council at this time, unless we do something with the sentencing guidelines.
Mr. Chairman, that is the unhappy conclusion.